Am I the only person who is glad that Australia is out of the goddamn World Cup?
Good morning.
G'day, world! It's Wednesday, the 28th of June, 2006. G'day, world, 130-something. Just got to bring up G'day, world, and see exactly what I'm up to here. 2 years of my...
130-something times, and you still can't work it out.
2 years of my frickin' life, people, have gone into this show. 130... Not that I begrudge it. 137, that makes us today. Haven't done one for about a week, Mike. Mike Seafang, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen.
Back on the show. How you doing, Fang?
Oh, I'm beautiful. Just ask my mother.
Now, mate, we need to start off the show today by thanking Robert Scoble.
Thank you, Robert.
For giving us the new excuse. Now, here's how it works. If somebody comes to you, if your wife comes to you, boys and girls, or boys, and says, why didn't you take the rubbish out? Why didn't you take the rubbish? Yeah, all girls. Yeah, we don't discriminate against lesbians. In fact, we're quite pro-lesbian on this show. If your wife comes and says, why didn't you take the rubbish out? What do you say? The web killed it.
What?
If you're in a car accident and you slam into another car and the guy gets out and he says, what are you doing, man? You say, oh, it was the web. Sorry, it was the web's fault. If you're up on murder charges, if you shoot your next door neighbour because he's, you know, playing Mariah Carey late at night, or just playing Mariah Carey at all, fair, which is just a fair enough excuse to have somebody whacked, and you're in court and you're up on the witness stand, hey, I'm getting echo. Stop doing whatever you're doing. And the judge says, you know, why did you do it? You say, it was the web. The web is now the excuse du jour for pretty much anything. Even if it's got nothing to do with the web, it's still an excuse, according to Scoble. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea. I'm just trying to crank up my reader, which is probably why I get all that echo. No, enlighten me, Cameron.
Well, as I'm sure all of you who read the web are familiar, last week Microsoft kind of soft announced in an MSN news group or something, I think, that WinFS is kind of dead, or, well, it's not really dead. We're kind of putting a bit of it into SQL and a bit of it into this and blah, blah, blah. It's basically dead. Now, Scoble wrote a blog post on this yesterday saying, what happened to WinFS? The web killed it.
Right.
And a whole bunch of people on his comments have gone, fucking what? What? They've called him on it, and Robert's got really defensive, and he's like, he's even gone like saying to people, well, are you in the Windows team? And if you are, tell me what you know, and if you're not, then I probably know more than you, so shut up. Which is really defensive for Robert. The web killed it. A lot of people have pointed out, well, really, you know, WinFS had nothing to do with the web. It was about how we stored data on our machines and, you know, a new improved sort of file system sitting on top of NTFS that was going to make it easier to retrieve and back up our data. Robert's going, no, the web killed it. But didn't really provide any explanation as to what the hell that means. But I love it. That's my new standard excuse for everything. Oh, yeah, it was the web. Yeah, the web did it.
The web did it.
The web ate my homework. All you kids out there listening, it's not the dog, it's the web ate my homework.
Interesting bit of history, though. I was actually in Building 25 of the Exchange team when Bill officially told Brian Valentine, who was running the Exchange team at the time, that it was going to be this combined file system yet again for about the third time while I was at Microsoft. Because up until that point, the Exchange store was the file service du jour for unstructured ad hoc data. Very interesting problem. So to try and design a database that can handle with structured high transaction integrity data like a database, and to do the unstructured soup like a message store, is still too frackin' hard. No one's figured out how to do it. And here we are. That's what really killed it. Boys and girls, it wasn't the web. too bloody hard.
The look, I'm going to admit that I didn't really follow the whole WinFS thing for a long time, but as people will remember, at one stage it was going to be one of the key features of Longhorn was the fact that it was going to have WinFS in it, and it was pretty much the only reason to get Longhorn that I could see, aka Vista now, was the fact that it was going to make storing your data and retrieving your data and finding your data, you know, it was going to be a major evolutionary leap forward, a revolutionary leap forward. Because the way that, as I understand it, the way that we sort of structure our data in folders and subfolders and whatever today kind of, you know, dates back to the dawn of computing. And no one's really done a big a job of updating that kind of schema for how we store information. And this was going to do that, but then a couple of, a year and a half or so ago, they went, actually, it's not going to be in Vista. And now it's not going to be at all. So there's really no other reason to get Vista now apart from the fact that it's a little bit prettier and it's, you know, supposedly going to be better security. But as I've said on this show before, my security's just fine. Now, I know that the mums and dads out there, the punters, probably need some help with their security because, you know, it's too hard to have a virus checker and to not open emails that you get from friends saying, look at this, this is great. And finding, oh, shit, it's a virus. But, you know, I think we need to get someone else on the show to explain to us what really happened to WinFS. I think it's time. I haven't done this for 18 months, man. I reckon it's time to Skype bomb some people.
Check it out. But it is a fundamental, difficult problem of physics, right? There's always been this argument, one store that does everything from structured to unstructured versus multiples with things like ADO sitting on top. And it's flip-flop, you know, for the 10 years I've been deeply involved with all this shit, it was going to be two, then one, then two, then one. It's just too hard. That's what's really happened. No one can figure out how to do it.
Yeah. Now, I want to call a landline here, but I know that if I try and set up a conference call with a landline from Skype while I'm talking to you,
it's going to go shite, so you want me to shut up while you put me on hold and go and do what you got to do?
In fact, I'm going to hang up on you and then call you back.
Fine. Shies and that's...
We regret that the number you have dialed is temporarily out of service.
Yeah, great. Thanks for sharing.
02X211.
Okay, number.
What happened to 132049 for Microsoft Switch?
Who knows?
Shit.
Don't you hate that? Nothing stays the same. When you gave me time to crank up my guitar, so now you're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, really, please. That sounds awful. shit. What's Microsoft's landline number now?
Contact us.
I'm looking up the website here.
029870 blah, 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 blah.
132058.
Not 58.
They changed 132049. All right, hang up. I'm going to hang up again. I'll call you back.
Okay, do
Turn
it.
Turn that goddamn guitar off.
Yes.
Welcome to Microsoft. For technical support, for sales inquiries, product information, event registration, Microsoft management and administration, and other general inquiries, press 2. To activate your mic. For product information, including Microsoft Business Solutions, press 1. For volume licensing inquiries, press 2. For Microsoft management and administration, press 3. To register... Please be advised that this call may be monitored or recorded for quality assurances.
Yeah, we're recording it, baby. Don't you worry about that.
Welcome to Microsoft Switchboard. My name's Joe. How may I direct your call?
Joe, can I speak to Jeff Putt, please?
Jeff Putt? May I ask who's calling?
Cameron Riley.
Cameron Riley from...
The Podcast Network.
No problem. I'll just transfer you through.
Thanks, mate.
Fancy a game of putt-putt?
Shh. Turn the goddamn microphone. Oh, that's not your guitar. That's the soul music. See if Putty's in a meeting. God, that's annoying.
Zach. actually going to come on at the climactic moment.
Jeff Butt speaking.
Putty, Cameron Riley.
How are you, mate?
Good, mate.
Good. What are you up to?
I'm recording this conversation. This is a podcast with Mike Seafang, who you don't know, but he's another ex-Microsoft. He's my co-host today on G'day World. How are you, Putty?
Yeah, good.
We wanted to talk to someone.
My preference is you don't record this conversation.
Oh, come on, mate. We want to talk to somebody about WinFS.
Well, I'm not the man.
Oh, who's the man, Jeff?
Let me find out for you.
No, come on, mate. You're the man. You're the Windows guy.
Yeah, no, not the man for WinFS.
Come on, mate. Just tell us what happened. We want to know what happened.
Sorry, Cameron, I can't make any sort of comment.
Come on, Putty. You run the Windows gig here. Do you still run the Windows gig?
I'm not allowed to talk.
Well, just give me the top five reasons why we still want to get Vista when it comes out, now that WinFS is gone, man.
No, I'm not going to do that either.
Oh, Putty, you're not playing fair, mate.
Yes, okay, so why don't I see you the right person to talk to you is, and then I'll give you a call back.
That's it? You can't help?
That's it.
No statement, right, no official announcement, nothing? Jeff. Mate, after all we've been through, I thought you...
I might have a chat offline and then see how we go.
That's no fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Putty, good to see you. See you, mate. Bye.
Don't you miss those corporate shackles, Cam?
Gee, that's not like Jeff.
Ah, come on, that's not fair. That's not fair.
Why not?
Oh, you remember.
Well, you're not allowed to talk to anyone without, you know, the official media monitors on you behind you. Particularly Cameron Riley. They always get told, don't talk to Cameron
exactly.
Riley.
Exactly. You're number one on the list of do not... You know, when you have those little stickers in the toilet, see if a bomb threat or Cameron Riley calls.
Hold on, let's call Frank. Hold on, hang up and I'll call you back.
Frank Arrigo.
Cameron Riley and Mike Seafang. Frank, you're on G'day World.
Hey, boys, how are you?
We're good. Oh, are you there, Fang?
Yeah, I'm here. Let me just shut the door.
No, I was after Fang.
Yes, the Fang is here.
Oh, you're there.
Are we going live?
You're live. Well, as live as this gets, you know.
It's okay, Frank. Fantastic. The door's shut. There's only three of us now.
I know. It's just us three. We can keep it close and personal.
Mate, we just rang Jeff Putt and asked him to give us a statement on what happened to WinFS and why we should buy Vista now that, you know, there's really nothing left in it. Even though I know WinFS hasn't been part of it for a while, but he refused to comment.
That's really funny. Did you actually get through to him?
Yeah, he took my call. I said it's Cameron, and he took my call, and I said, mate, you were recording a show. We're looking for someone from Microsoft to talk to us about WinFS and what happened and why we should buy Vista. And he said, no, I can't help you. I'll find out who can and get him to call you, mate.
Well, yeah, I guess the WinFS story kind of only broke over the weekend, right? And it kind of broke by one of the team members posting a blog about where things are at, you know? So it's kind of hot news. I guess they haven't put together the talking points yet, hey?
we started off the show by saying, did you read Scoble's post on WinFS and the web killing it? it's our new excuse. If anything goes wrong in any part, if you're up on a murder charge, you just say, oh yeah, it was the web. Yeah, no, the web did it, Your Honour. That's apparently Scoble's new catch-all excuse in his departing days. The web killed WinFS. Mate.
That's classic.
So, what can you tell us, Frankie? Well, you know, why should we buy Vista?
Why should you buy Vista?
To me, it just looks like a pretty makeover that's almost as pretty as OS X. But why else should we buy it these days?
Well, I'll give you from my experience. Okay, I've got a new machine. I've got a nice little Toshi dual core computer, and I think Vista's able to really drive the capabilities of that hardware. It's actually giving me some goodness in terms of, making that hardware sing for me. What it's also doing is, it's taking the concept of search, and a lot of that, the WinFS promise is delivered not through WinFS, but through a whole bunch of other bits and pieces in terms of the searching of the desktop and searching of files and all the other bits and pieces. So it's kind of there. It's not quite the WinFS vision, but, you know, it's kind of happening there. Other things, you know, I think what Vista's giving me is I'm sort of getting a bit of a productivity improvement already. I'm on sort of in terms of how I'm working. I'm changing the way I'm working. I'm sort of
in what way? How does it make you more productive?
I'll tell you what. The biggest thing, right? One of the things that I used to worry about is, you know, I'm a bit of a pack rat, so I used to folder information and put things into directories and really care about how I put stuff away. And in the last, you know, a little while, I haven't bothered about that. I literally am just chucking everything in one place, and I'm using search to find my information. And that's actually helping me. That's saving me.
Okay, but mate,
hours a week.
But mate, I'm doing that as well with Google Desktop on XP or MSN Search on XP. Does exactly the same thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. There's other bits and pieces that can do it for you.
Does Vista?
I'm not disagreeing with you.
But does Vista add anything over and above what we've already got today? Is my question. That's nice.
Mr. Riley.
Nice snappy answer there, Frank.
No. It's a bit of a loaded question, but let me see if I can answer that and get kind of do a bit of it justice. All right. So a lot of the stuff that you're kind of getting, yeah, you got because you've got grabbed bits and pieces and you've kind of built your little environment to sort of make that happen. I think for the average punter, it becomes an out of the box experience. So from that perspective, it's a simpler way of making things happen. From an enterprise point of view, what they've tried to
don't care about enterprise. What? I don't care about enterprise. I'm not an enterprise.
We're talking consumer. We just want the consumer story. Is that what you're caring about?
The punters, mate. The punters.
Punter at home. Punter at home. The punter at home. Okay, again, I'll give you the examples. No. Look, seriously. Me, punter at home with my 15-year-old son. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
My 15-year-old son, he's got his own little computer. He's running Firefox. He's tweaks it up. He's got all his bits and pieces. He's a happy little camper, right? He's a little uber geek that he is, right? Little ant. Or Rigo, as he likes to call himself. He's got his own little persona. So I bring home my machine with Vista, and Rigo says, can I check it out? I go, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, he's curious. He wants to have a look at it. And by the end of the night, just him poking around, he goes, I want to upgrade my machine. It wasn't me putting a gun to his head, say, Rigo, you got to upgrade this computer. It was him, you know, as a, you know, subversive 15-year-old teenager who doesn't want to do what his dad does, kind of saying, I like what it's doing for me.
Yeah,
you
but,
know,
he, what, Frank? What? All I keep hearing out of Microsoft is it's shinier, and no one's telling me what it's actually going to do for me or for my mum. You guys have spent how many years working on this? How's it going to make my computing experience better?
Well, I want to avoid any of the marketing. No. Cam, you know, you put me on the spot here. I just want to avoid any of the marketing stories. I'm saying just from my personal experience, my 15-year-old son, what he saw in terms of working with the system, he felt like he was getting a better, you know, bang for buck, user experience, all the other bits and pieces that go with that. In terms of, do I turn that into, you know, the marketing buzzword, clear, concise, and, you know, confident? Connected, I don't know. Just, you know, I haven't got you the marketing spin on it. You know, I'm giving you a perspective from a punter.
No, that's why we come to you, buddy, because you're real. We already tried marketing. We tried Jeff. He didn't want to talk to us.
Yeah, I had my doubts, but when Rigo, again, he's my test case. You know, he's a, you know. Yeah. You've met him, Cameron. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I know. He's hardcore, man. He's hardcore.
I asked him the same thing. I said, what is it about it, Anton, that you like? And I go, it just feels nice. It feels good. You know, it feels comfy. I can sit in there. I can type in, you know, find my applications. I can get stuff started. Things hang together. It's easier to configure. You know, he couldn't give it to me in a marketing-friendly story? No, but he can tell me that him sitting in front of the machine, he's actually able to drive it and feels more confident with it.
I can see the...
Can I turn that into a marketing spiel?
Yeah, right. I can see the ad campaign now. Windows Vista, it feels good. It feels good.
That's why I bought my Mac.
No, it's even simpler. Rego says it's good.
Rego says it's good. You know, funnily enough, the sort of argument or the way that you're positioning that is exactly what I hear from Mac heads.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Mac heads tell me that, you know, Mike Vallandow, who we had on the show last week, said to Mike, you know, what do you like about your new PowerBook? And he's like, it's just good. It just feels good. You know?
I know. It's kind of a bit of an emotional kind of connection, but I think that's part of what it's trying to... Especially from a consumer point of view, I think that's one of the things it's trying. You know, it's striving for is trying. It's striving for that emotional connection. You know?
Absolutely, we're going to hear words like fluid and scrolls like butter and all these things that get us juiced up about our Macs. And seriously, something that's changed my life and the way I find stuff is iPhoto on the Mac, which is a thing that scrolls like butter. You don't know where your photos are, and you can belt through, you know, tens of thousands of photos in seconds, and it does change the way you interact with the beast.
Yep.
And I haven't had to cobble down all these bloody add-ins, and I haven't got Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory platform of things I've found and downloaded. Now, there is value in having the best bits chosen, pre-configured with sensible defaults switched on.
Now, Frank, rumour has it you were in Melbourne yesterday and you didn't take me out for a coffee.
I was in Melbourne yesterday. Man, you're good, Cam.
This is the real...
It was a very quick trip.
This is the real reason I decided to pick on you today is because your sister told me that you're in town, and I thought, fucking Frank came to town, didn't come in, didn't say g'day, didn't pop into TPN headquarters, nothing.
Well, you know, I blame that on my host who built my agenda for the day, David Lemfers, right?
Oh. So,
you know, I was at his disposal. So I'm just passing the buck, right? So
for the next month, on every episode of G'day World, I'm going to cold call somebody at Microsoft in Australia or the US and say, quick elevator pitch for Windows Vista, and see how many people can give me something concise, 5 bullet points, that gets me excited.
Look, I think that's a very good idea. I'll tell you now, my aha moment, and I'll go back to it, is when Anthony said, I want to install it on my machine. That for me was, seriously, that was the thing that said to me, we're onto something.
Yeah. All right, maybe
it probably doesn't convince you, Cam, but maybe it made me go, wow.
Maybe we can get Rego on the show?
Yeah, you get him to get an Aspie on the show to talk to you, I doubt it. maybe he can type something for you.
Oh, all right, not going to happen.
Man, I can't even talk to him. Wow, was amazing.
You've got to explain to people what an Aspie is, if you want to go there.
Very quickly. So Anthony, my son Anthony, is turned 15. He's been diagnosed, or, you know, he has Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism, you know, high-functioning autism. Asperger's, you know, Aspies, as they like to call themselves, there's some specific character traits they happen to have, you know, can't communicate, can't read body language, all that kind of stuff. But very, you know, very smart, very capable, you know, sort of live in their own little world. And, you know, most people in IT exhibit these kinds of...
big time.
Elements, right? We all suffer from many forms of autism in one way or another.
Yeah.
A lot of famous Aspergers out there. People, you know, maybe undiagnosed people like Bill Gates and Steven Spielberg and a whole range of others are Adam Sandler, I believe, is another one who hasn't been publicly outed, but he exhibits all the traits. You know, these are some of the folks that are out there who are, you know, they say Leonardo da Vinci was as well. You know? So there you go. It's all good company.
And a
basically
Freemason.
Anyone who's ever flushed the toilet before they finished a whiz, right?
Indeed.
I think they're A-types. Now, Frank, just before you go, Bill Gates has announced that, you know, that's pretty much it. He's calling it a day, riding off into the sunset to save the lives of millions of people. As a 15-year Microsoft, 15 or 16 now? How long have you been there?
15. I just hit 15 in May, Cam. You know, I guess, how do I feel about it? Look, I've got mixed feelings. On one hand, it's sad to lose the, you know, the guy that started it all and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's a good sign that, you know, the company needs other leaders and other figureheads and other people to drive it. And in all honesty, Bill, you know, had been in this, you know, chief architect role for a lot, for, you know, the last couple of years, he's kind of, you know, he was starting to ride out into the sunset anyway. You know, what he's trying to do with the Gates Foundation, what's got $100 billion now to play with, that's, you know, that's some serious, you know, world-changing kind of stuff, and I think that's kind of cool that he's setting himself up and Warren's putting money into the bucket and all the other bits and pieces to take it forward.
Yeah,
it'd
that was
good to see, you know.
I was going to say, that was amazing news the other day that Warren Buffett, who's the second richest guy in the United States and obviously really good mates with Bill, they've been playing bridge together and taking holidays to China and whatever over the last 10 years, that he's in giving away, what, 85% or something of his net worth and putting it into the Gates Foundation?
Yeah, yeah, it's going to, you know, I think the foundation's going to have, like I said, $100 billion or so to deal with, you know, do something. You know, in a lot of ways, it's the new government, right? Trying to deal with some of these big challenges.
That's mind-blowing stuff, isn't it? Mind-blowing.
It really is mind-blowing stuff. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, Microsoft helped him to be put in a position to do this, and hopefully he can do some good out of it. And, you know, that
in a lot of ways.
Love it.
In every way. I mean, he, the success of Microsoft, but, you know, you have to think about, this is, there's been some big philanthropists over the last, you know, couple of hundred years, but, you know, I think this is going to go, in terms of scale and reach and what they're setting out to do and the technology that they have available to them, this is historical. And to have two private individuals who you know, self-created that are, you know, dropping this amount of money into solving world issues, world health issues, this is just, you know, mind-blowing in terms of...
It is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So you got to say that's a good thing. And I think... what this also gives, it gives a chance for some other leaders within Microsoft, and I think Ray Ozzie is a legend in a lot of ways, and he's kind of stepping up the plate to take this on, and it can only be good
Let me ask you about the Ray Ozzie thing, just quickly, because, you know, I know over my time at Microsoft, we had lots of people come into that, either the COO or the CTO kind of role, and they never last long. They would always last a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then they leave, always under mysterious circumstances. You know, Nathan Myhrvold was there a little bit longer than that, but then Nathan left, and now he's taken over the world's intellectual property. Who was the guy from Silicon Graphics who came in, and there's just a string of them, too many to even recall over the last 10 years, that come and go. They never really seem to stick around. Do you think Ray's going to be different?
I think so. I think Ray is going to be different. I think Ray's got a vision. I don't know if you had a chance to watch his keynote at TechEd from Boston, where he kind of talked a bit about his history and what he's done and all that kind of stuff. But Ray's been an interesting guy. He's been at sort of the turning points of a number of major shifts in computing over the last, you know, number of years, and I think he can continue to do so, you know, and really, you know, lead us forward into this Windows Live, you know, hosted applications world that we're sort of moving towards. And I feel pretty confident that he can do stuff, you know, and really make a difference. You know,
don't think he's too old.
Yeah, well, I saw your beautiful picture that you put up of the older than you. I thought that was a cack, actually. But is he too old? I don't know. Look, I think what's important is we need to have people around to support him and kind of give us a view of the young, of the new as well. You know, look at Google. Okay, you put up the photo of Sergey and Larry, but, you know, there's also Eric Schmidt, right?
Come on, Eric's
in that picture, right?
Eric's a puppet. Everyone knows Eric's a puppet.
Yeah, I know. Okay, but you know, everyone kind of focuses on one part and they kind of don't look at all the other bits and pieces there as well.
But, you know, at least Ray is showing some sort of signs on the outside of being a little bit of a rock star. I mean, he's building an audience and he's doing stuff that none of the other aforementioned guys did, right?
Yeah, look, I think Ray's taking a leadership role and, you know, he's kind of got the mandate to do that, and I think it can only be good, you know. Like I said, that TechEd keynote, you know, I would look, you know, I'd fire it up, look at Ray's bit and what go through, and it was fantastic. I got a kick out of it, personally.
Best Microsoft product I've been using lately, bar none, FolderShare.
Ah, excellent. That's one of the companies we bought and integrated into Windows Live. That's very cool.
Documents in the cloud, man. Synchronizing documents through the cloud. It's beautiful. Works absolutely beautifully.
Again, think of Ray's history, you know.
Exactly.
Groove and what that was all about, and the Lotus Vision, the stuff in the cloud. That's all come from that man, right? So
Groove never excited me. Groove never delivered. No, never delivered on it for me.
Okay.
I mean, I like the Vision.
Well integrated. Yeah.
It never really. Anyway,
but all right. The Lotus Notes replication stuff was, and still is, one of the things that no one's ever beaten, right? I mean, Exchange and Outlook, and everybody tried to kill it for years, and it's a profound piece of technology. Still good. Anyway,
we know you got a real job to go do, Frank. I appreciate you coming on, mate.
Hey, can I ask one quick one while you
problem.
Guys are both
love
there?
Talking boys.
What's the quick one, Faith?
The quick one is, outside Microsoft, the whole industry in general, who is the next rock star? Young, old, or indifferent? Who's the biggest name on your lips?
This punk kid who invented Zuma. We had Thomas Hawke on the show. He's 18! Rigo.
I'm going to vote for Dick Hart from Skip.
Oh, yeah,
what
Dick.
What about you, Frank?
Pass. I got no.
Rigo.
My boy Rigo. I honestly don't know. I think the next big thing isn't even out there yet. I have a suspect.
All right. Thank you, Frankie. Go back to work. Next time you come to Melbourne, buy me a coffee.
You're on.
See you, buddy.
See you, Frank. Bye.
Cheers, Frank.
Dick Hart is a rock star. I was very fortunate when I was in New York in October to hang out with Dick at a party with Renee Blodgett. She invited both of us, and he's a cool guy, man.
He is, and that Skip and Score stuff is profound. In fact, we've got to get the Score comment stuff working on the TPN blogs. Got to do that.
Speaking of attention, I'm going to have Chris Sard, who's the CEO of Touchstone.
Myself.
I touch myself. Chris Sard. Chris is an Aussie entrepreneur who's got a startup that's in that kind of space. Let me just try and... what's his name of his company? Touchstone. There you go. Are you it's an attention business, and he knows all these guys. So he's going to come on the Two Web Crew show on Sunday night and talk a little bit about where we're at with attention and where it's going.
Oh, that'll link to gathering for which I'm not worthy.
Well, you know the membership rules, man. You know the membership rules. You've got to be experiencing the pain of being an entrepreneur on a daily basis. And
hey,
you know,
mate, I had $7 in my bank account last week.
Yeah, I know. If you're still putting yourself in that right. camp, you can come
it's,
on.
It's the swallow criteria I can't quite come to terms with.
Anyway, news of the day. There was some news. What was the news?
There was. Could be Scoble's update to the web killed it. Says, update. This is my theory. I don't really know why it was killed.
Yeah.
Okay. You scrambled to your news yet? Have you found something interesting?
Nah, not really.
Yeah, it's a bit of that sort of a day, isn't it?
Well, we haven't done a show for a week. I'm pretty sure there was something interesting in the last week, but...
I don't want to hear either the words soccer or shopping centre.
No.
There's got to be something better than that out there. Oh, here's a good one. Dave the Life Cludger Wallace has been dancing in Second Life. Now, that is news to me.
Yeah?
Yeah. In fact, I suspect the Second Life stuff is going to be profound in terms of people connecting and creating community and... Dave's only been in there about 5 hours, and he's already bumped in some of the heavies from the NetSquared crew in San Francisco. And now he's been up there dancing with some nice-looking young cheeky babe avatars. Kind of interesting, I'd suggest.
Why? I don't get that.
You don't get it?
No.
I think I do, but it's hard to explain because I'm one of these Aussie burgery types myself. One of the big issues with the whole online community stuff is how do you make interesting connections other than just randomly email and hang around on boring discussion boards and crap like that. and, you know, wandering around some world as an avatar doing stuff can attract interesting connections that wouldn't otherwise happen. And one of the important things about what the long tail and other connected technologies can bring is, you know, connecting with that one other individual who thinks what you're doing is interesting. And I think that's important. I don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but this is a little example of it, right? It's goodness. It's got to lead to real life connections and real life meetings or real life transactions, and I think it's got the potential to do so.
Okay, so it's got nothing specifically to do with the fact that he's dancing. Dave the Life Cludger Wallace, for people who don't know Dave, host on TPN, popular blogger, and quadriplegic. So the fact that Dave is dancing is a big thing. But, you know, the whole Second Life thing, I can kind of get the random connections and that kind of stuff. I haven't quite figured out what Second Life is for yet. I mean, I can kind of see it turning into a Snow Crash / Neuromancer sort of, you know, virtual universe, or the precursor to one of those, which is all goodness. But I haven't yet discerned a practical purpose for me being in Second Life, although I am, you know, I've got an avatar.
I think the whole marketplace metaphor, right, it's been important for society and for commerce, just the place where you go to connect to trade stuff. It kind of takes that to a new level, doesn't it? Exactly how, yeah, I don't know, I'm jury's out on that. Is it going to be 3D avatars on a computer screen? Probably not.
Yeah, but, yeah, I haven't quite figured out what I do with it today. And, you know, I can kind of understand World of Warcraft. We had Mike Vallander on last week talking about that. Yeah. I can understand where there's a function and a purpose, like role-playing, you know, in a game, even though I don't get into it. But I can understand, you know, I've played games and I've played Age of Empires, and I can understand, yeah, you know, going in there and accomplishing tasks and doing stuff. Second Life's obviously a lot more free-form than that. So if you're not accomplishing tasks and you're not there just to, you know, have virtual sex, which I completely understand as well. What else you do with it? But then, you know, what do you do with Instant Messenger? What do you do with Skype? You talk to people, you communicate with people. As you said, you know, you build relationships.
Yeah, but unless you're an articulate, debonair man about town like the Cam, how do you make those initial connections, particularly when you're a, you know, inarticulate, overthinking geek like me or a C4 quad like Dave? It's the opportunity to make the first connection and then do your stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm saying that I can understand that you can do all that kind of stuff with it.
Yeah.
But I've personally been, so, you know, we put Father Bob in there, and we're trying to figure out what we can do with Father Bob in Second Life, and you know, I see it as, you know, a tabula rasa big opportunity that I haven't quite figured out what I do with it. But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you've probably got the model inside out if you're putting Father Bob in there, right? You want a handful of your street workers roaming around there under the Father Bob brand.
We want both. You know, I think it's important for Father Bob to be in there so people can talk with him and communicate with him. And, yeah, we've played around with the idea of building a church or some sort of temple in there where people can come and can talk to Father Bob and get, you know, wisdom and guidance and that kind of stuff. But I don't know.
No, I still say it's upside down the other way. You have people wandering around who connect people up with Father Bob, and, you know, they're able to make other channel connections, you know, instant message him, ring him up, emailing him, go to see him, whatever you need to do. Mm. I think putting the old guy in there is kind of hard because they're clunky things to navigate around in. I can't be bothered. The whole stuff leaves me cold, right?
I got an interesting thing that Mike Arrington wrote the other day. This is something that we should finish up on. I thought this was good. Yeah, he was. The headline to the post was, "Forget net neutrality, just take the networks away from the telcos." you know, I like this idea that we need to break the back of the control that the telcos have. I mean, it's becoming increasingly obvious to anyone who wants to read between the lines that the telcos are looking to gain greater and greater control over. Yes, thank you, PDA. they're trying to get more and more control over the content that's on the web. I mean, they already control the pipes. Now they want to control access to content, despite their denials to the contrary. The truth is, we all know this, that they do. I really liked something that I read during the week. I blogged about it. Tim Berners-Lee wrote a post promoting net neutrality. And I loved his opening line to the post. When I invented the web...
The internet, yeah.
The web. The web.
The web, the web. Yes, 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 correct.
When I invented the web... oh, I love that man. How cool was that?
He did it in video as well. Adam Curry picked on up and had a bit of a rant about it. And, I mean, Adam's views on this are kind of interesting too, the whole, all the peering agreements and buying and selling of mass bandwidths and phone call handovers that happen are non-trivial and interesting. It's a little bit more complex than we'd like to think, but, yes, yeah, so the minute your telco starts controlling what goes down the pipe, you've got a different dynamic, haven't you?
You do, and look, that's definitely what they want to do. I mean, I know from my dealings with some Australian telcos over the last decade that they see it as their God-given right to move up the value stack, as they like to call it, and not just be a pipe. They want to start earning revenue from content. And, you know, the telcos in Australia have at various times looked at acquiring, you know, TV stations and magazine printing and all that kind of stuff. But...
So that's it's a very different discussion to denying them the right to recoup the investment they've made in the infrastructure. I'm not too sure that we are being ripped off at the moment in terms of how much has been paid to roll out this gear and how much we pay for our bandwidth, but it's a very different discussion to moving up the value stack, as you just put it.
Yeah.
What have you just missed? What have you done?
Oh, Van from the Geeks of Hazzard just sent me an SMS saying that he's buying a group of people tickets to go see Superman Returns on Friday night. Wants to know if I want to go.
You can't.
I might be able to. I've got to check with the missus. The missus is in Sydney for a few days. I'm not sure when she's back. Yeah, so it's an interesting situation. So, you know, he says, forget the argument that telcos need to be guaranteed a return on investment or they won't upgrade our bandwidth. No one guarantees Intel a return before they spend billions in R&D on their next Pentium chip to beat their competitors at AMD. No one guarantees Cisco a return on their investment before they deploy their next router to beat Juniper. In real competitive markets, the market provides access to capital. So what's the solution? Kessler, who he's quoting, who... I thought was the main character in Claiborne. Claiborne.thepodcastnetwork.com. Kessler comes up with a modest proposal of sorts that is amusing to read, but which will never play in Silicon Valley with its libertarian focus on property rights. He suggests yanking language out of the Supreme Court Kelo eminent domain case and using that to argue for taking over broadband networks from the telcos, a situation for which there is some evidence that better broadband can be delivered. His point, satirically enough, is that if the threats are made loudly enough, it could freak out the telcos just enough to generate some real competition in new networks. Anyway. Yeah, I think this is this net neutrality thing is an issue which we need to fight against. Well, we need to fight for net neutrality pretty hard over the course of the next coming months, and we need to hope to hell that we start to come up with some non-telco alternatives, because these telcos scare the hell out of me. I don't trust them. I don't trust them a minute.
Leave our content alone, telcos and chip makers alike. Don't build me machines that are DRM'd and fiddling around with the content either. It's just as bad.
That was the other thing, obviously, that happened in the last week is the WIPO meeting, the World Intellectual Property Organization, where they snuck through a podcasting amendment into their secretive meeting.
Really?
They're basically trying to give any broadcaster, it was represented by a lot of Latin American broadcast companies apparently, but the deal as I understand it is that if a broadcaster broadcasts any content, whether they own it or not, whether it's licensed under Creative Commons or not, they have the rights over it.
Oh, good.
So they can take your podcast, broadcast it, and then they own it. They own the copyright on that show, is what they're trying to get away with. Now, I don't know how they're going to enforce that, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of these initiatives happening all around the world, fairly hush-hush. If it wasn't for Cory Doctorow and the EFF, you'd never hear about most of these things. But they're basically trying to shut down in a variety of ways this massive explosion of innovation that's happening on the web at the moment, because they see this as a genuine threat to their existence, and broadcasters and telcos alike. So,
therein lies the fun. We are playing with fire here, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a pessimist by nature, but really? I hope... Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always imagine the worst and, you know, then work my
usually
ass
right.
off.
Yeah.
No. Well, I plan for the worst and hope for better, but I usually plan for the worst case. Yeah, my experience has been worst case scenarios, you know, are usually worth planning for. And so at least, you know, you're aware of it, you're ready for it. And if, you know, the worst case scenario doesn't eventuate, it's all upside, right? But I plan around worst case scenarios. Well, mate, I got to go. I got another
Likewise,
show.
Likewise, my friend.
You got to go. I got to go. Thanks for joining me on the show today, mate.
Look, it's my pleasure. I'm just disappointed. We couldn't have done more in the past week. It would have been a hoot.
Ah, yeah, sorry. The life got ahead of me last week.
I didn't do that.
I want to thank our special guest, Jeff Putt, for his brief appearance. And
Putty.
Be the last time Putty ever talks to me. And Frank Arrigo.
The inimitable Frank.
Yeah, Frank, thank you, Frank, for coming on and having some fun with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you next time. And until then, I say, see you later, world!
Ta-ta.
The Applied Karate Show here on the Podcast Network is a show for the progressive traditionalist practitioner of karate. Listen in as in each episode we talk to a range of quiet achievers, up-and-coming names and well-known personalities, about the histories, techniques, technologies, applications, personalities and philosophies of classical karate. Our focus is on gaining further understanding about how classical karate has developed in Okinawa, Japan and around the world. The Applied Karate Show. Karate.thepodcastnetwork.com or search for Applied Karate in iTunes or podcastalley.com.